Petersfield's Shine Radio.
Hello, I'm Geoff Lacey.
And I'm Claire Venice.
I'm dreaming of barbecues.
And I'm dreaming of greenhouses in this week's
Peapod. Thank you for joining us in this week's Peapod. We're continuing our February episodes with positive things you can do. And as we head towards spring, it's the perfect time to get down and dirty in the garden. Steve Amos from the Adhurst Estate Allotment brings news from this more popular than ever local spot.
We also speak to acclaimed portrait photographer Michael Clement about a photographic documentary project he embarked on in the first lockdown, and it's at a location near you.
And we're delighted that the 60-second history audio stories are back. Ryan Watts from the Petersfield Museum looks at the importance of alcohol in the history of Petersfield in this new series. Can't wait for that.
Laura Shepherd catches up with the organisers of the Petersfield Running Community NHS fundraiser after last week's exercise extravaganza. John Walker from the Petersfield Post brings the latest local news, and Susie's Wild Walk starts off rather noisily.
And we end this week's Peapod with the blues from Waterlooville-based singer-songwriter Hannah Ream and her song Foolish Pride.
If you love Petersfield...
I love the square.
It's a lovely, lovely town.
The hangers.
Everyone's welcome.
Then the Peapod loves you.
It's just a nice town.
Everything Petersfield is in the Peapod with Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey.
Hello, Claire.
Hello, Geoff. How's your week been?
Not too bad. Not too bad. It's just drifting, as I keep saying, week in, week out. Monday comes round so quickly, but it's such an enjoyable time. And how are you?
Do you know, I'm sort of reeling a bit. Last week was a real roller coaster of a week for me. And it had such great highs. I joined the Petersfield Community Running Group for this NHS fundraiser and did a bit of running. And I'd committed to do it before I saw the weather forecast. So
I know what you're going to say.
Oh, my goodness. Three really cold runs, but it was brilliant to be a part of it. It felt great, although I don't think any of us saw each other. We were all doing this individually. But to be part of a group to work together towards something was fantastic, you know, particularly in that awful weather. But so that was a high. But then in the midst of all that, I was also dealing with year five fractions to try and help teach my 9-year-old.
Oh, dear.
And, you know, I'm glad it's half term. So I feel like the roller coaster hopefully has finished and I'm now on that calm ending. Fingers crossed.
Now,
anyway.
Did I touch on last week about joggers running on ice, tiptoeing along, and you've done exactly the same thing?
I did.
Is that right?
Yeah, I did. And I thought of you, actually, Geoff. I didn't mean to. I purposely had planned routes that I didn't think were going to be icy, because it is one of the things that scares me, and I'm sure every runner feels the same. It's not smart. But there was the particular occasion where I did have to tiptoe. And actually, just at that point, a truck came by, and it was sort of icy but a bit slushy at the same time. And so I got this, bit like you had a couple of weeks ago, this sort of great big wall of water coming up. And it was cold water, icy cold water, up onto me. So, yeah.
And when was the last time you did fractions? Because if I was asked to do fractions now, I would struggle.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because probably 30 years, at least, I'd have thought. When do you use improper fractions? And you're a bank manager. You deal with numbers and money on a daily basis.
Yeah. No, so, I don't. And that's what the boys said when they would do it, when they do maths, or when am I ever going to need this? And they're right. When do you ever use anything you learnt in maths after you've done your GCSEs or A-levels?
Yeah, not fractions. Yeah, I struggled.
We've got quite a bit to talk about today, but I just want to touch on something. As always, I met up with John to have a chat around for this week's Peapod. And one of our ongoing subjects is the traffic up the high street and the no access in between Lloyd's and HSB. And while we were talking yesterday, we actually saw a Petersfield Town Council van drive through the no access, so which we thought was quite funny.
Did they see you and wave?
No. Well, it may feature in this week's Petersfield Post. Who knows?
Oh dear.
Now, Claire, last week we had you had a really great interview with Dr. John Mason, read the Dark Skies Festival. Did you watch it or listen to it on Friday?
We did. You know, I was so inspired by talking to Dr. John Mason about the Dark Skies Festival, and he opened the festival on Friday with an hour-long kind of demonstration, workshop, really, of the night sky. And we did. We watched it. We turned all the lights off. We watched his workshop, and then we quickly bundled ourselves up into hats and scarves and gloves and went out to look at the sky, which was, on Friday night, really crisp and clear and very, very cold out there. But we did. We spotted a bunch of stars and constellations we hadn't, well, we'd seen before but hadn't recognised. So I really enjoyed that. Did you watch it, Geoff?
I was cooking. My wife listened and she was enthralled. A lot of what I heard went right over my head. Perhaps if I'd concentrated, I might have understood more. But he sounds so enthusiastic. It's the same on the interview you did last week. He just loves what he's talking about. And you can really hear his passion about the dark skies.
Yeah, and the festival actually is continuing. So it continues on until the 28th of February. So he's got some more coming up this weekend. So do check out the website if you're interested. It's the South Downs National Park website. All the information will be there. So I'm definitely going to be dipping in again to watch a bit more.
So, Claire, this week, it's one of my favourite weeks of the year. It's Shrove Tuesday. Pancakes. How do you like yours?
You know, I think I remember talking to you about this last year. I'm not sure if it is your favourite week, but I do like Shrove Tuesday. And either sweet or savoury, I'm happy to eat a pancake any day of the year. Do you like them, John? Because I'm not sure if you do.
I will eat them. Really? No, I'm more of a lemon and sugar man. But if they're there, they're there. I'll eat them.
It's half term and I can't remember. I think last year Shrove Tuesday might have been on a school day. So I think I probably got up early to make a few pancakes before school for the girls. But half term, my teenagers aren't getting up early for breakfast. Well, so it may be that we do savoury lunch ones instead this week.
Well,
I don't know. We'll have to see.
My eldest is over 18 and I spoke to him this afternoon. He was just having lunch at 3:30 because he'd only had breakfast at 12:30.
Yeah, well, at least he had breakfast.
His evening meal is going to be about 7:30 and then we're going to bed. So he eats 3 meals in the space of about 8 hours.
Oh, those days, hey?
Yeah.
But this week's Peapod is all about, well, looking forward to spring, hopefully, which isn't too far around the corner. Fingers crossed. And we've got Steve Amos from the Adhurst Estate Allotments telling us all about this wonderful location. So it's making me want to get out to garden again, which I can't wait for.
Yeah, are you looking forward to getting down and dirty in the garden?
Yes, always.
Yes, I must take a wander up to those allotments, because whenever I hear Steve, like Dr. John, he's so enthusiastic. And the passion for the allotments really comes over.
Yeah, absolutely. It does.
We love to hear from you. So if you have a story you'd like us to cover or would just like to say hi, please get in touch. We're on 01730 555 500 or email pod@thepeapod.uk.
Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey in Petersfield's Peapod.
Coming up, Steve Amos inspires us to grow our own veg this year, and Susie starts her wild walk with a rumpus. But first, John Walker has the latest news from Petersfield and the surrounding villages.
John, how are you?
Very well, thank you. After a week of cold and snow and everything, and here we are in the churchyard on Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day, Geoff.
And a happy Valentine's Day to you, John. I can't think of anyone else I'd like to spend it with.
Oh, dear. On that note, switch off, let's go for a walk. Yeah, Valentine's Day, bit ironic. You can't do anything, you can't take your missus anywhere, you can't. Flowers and cards, that's it. Mind you, that's all I do every year anyway, so it doesn't matter.
That's more than normal, isn't it?
Well, yes, yeah.
Now, John, before we go on to what's in the Peaceful Post this week, last week you reprinted the photo of Eric Jameson and the police dog, and I was actually the one 2 weeks ago to tell you the policeman's name. So you've reproduced it last week, and you've credited someone else with giving you that name. Thoughts?
Sorry. No, the lad wrote a letter in, and he obviously knew him. I think he was related to Jameson, and that's all I can say, Geoff, apart from sorry again.
I forgive you. So, John, what's going to be in the Peaceful Post this week?
Well, there's an interesting feature on deer.
You seem to get deer into every conversation we have. Why is that?
Well, the near-death deer experience that you had kind of made me think about deer in a more, I don't know, intellectual way, if you like. I was quite intrigued because it turns out the deer population in this part of England is exploding. Apparently there's more than 2.5 million of them nationally, as much as they can count. That's just in England. So, yeah, and nobody's responsible for them, as you know. So there's a feature about deer and where they are in this area and what's being done about them, what people think about them, and so many interesting proposals, like reintroducing the grey wolf and the lynx to sheep-killing machines, if ever I heard of them. But apparently the experts tell us they won't touch sheep who are just dozing in a field. They'll chase down hard-to-catch deer instead. And I'm sure the farmers will be loving that proposal.
Now, last week on Shine Radio, we had an interview with Rob McCatter from the council, telling us all about the proposed plans for the traffic calming through the High Street. Have you heard any more on that?
Yeah, I mean, they're looking at it. The first lot of bollards and what have you was in what they called the first tranche of government money. The second tranche has now been released, and one of the schemes that is going to be modified, modernised, made more permanent is the Petersfield High Street scheme and the so-called Busgate, which has become the Busgate affair, to be perfectly frank. And their plans are to replace all the bollards with planters and tighten up on the bus gate, all sorts of things to make it hard for cars to get through. And if this is going to happen, which it's expected to, it will happen in mid to end of March, the approval, and then the work after that will happen as soon as the Hampshire County Council can do it. I would say, just for a point of interest, that all this government money doesn't come from a money tree, it comes from you and me in taxes. So all these plans they're gaily spending hundreds of thousands of pounds on are being funded by the Joe public, you and me, and yet we don't seem to be having much say in whether we think they're good, bad or indifferent, which maybe that's what a government should do. Or maybe it's a government state job.
Now, John, there was a lovely double-page spread on Winton Place, and there was a photo of me, which was great to see, so thank you very much for that. But I hear you've got some interesting news about the Festival Hall.
Well, as you know, that was a lovely picture of you, Geoff. I can't remember what you were actually doing, but you did it very well, all I can say. Yeah, obviously, for the Winton Players and other amateur dramatic groups, the Festival Hall is their spiritual and performance home. Over the years, there's been a whole lot of issues around the building itself, leaky roofs, kitchen extension that's falling down, prices for rent to hire, so on and so forth. I wouldn't say it's been a controversial building, but it certainly caused more than a few debates, shall we say. But now there is a plan that was approved by Petersfield Town Council's Halls Committee. It's the town council who own the Festival Hall, for those who don't know, to spend £12 million upgrading it.
Wow.
The original plan was set out at 2 or 3 million. It has now grown to 12 million. Well, it's 11.89 million, if you want to be precise, but I'm rounding it up to 12 million because I'm a nasty journalist. Inaccurate.
Well, it's nearer 12 than it is 11.
Well, yeah. And again, it's an interesting concept. The Halls Committee was given a presentation by an architect on this proposal. All the other councillors sat in on the presentation, and the presentation was then approved by the Halls Committee unanimously, and it now goes to full council to be approved or otherwise, but the odds are that it will be approved. Whether it's just a wish list, in which case they've spent lots of money on architects for no reason of anything happening, and it's not cheap, these things, we're probably talking tens of thousands of pounds, or they intend to go ahead with it and spend the 12 million, perhaps in stages over 2 or 3 years. I don't know. But what I do know is Petersfield Town Council can't lay its hands to 12 million pounds. So guess what? Step forward again, the taxpayer. They will borrow it. They could borrow it. Who knows where they'll get it from. But ultimately, the people who'll end up paying for it are you and me. And the town council put up its share of the council tax last year by quite a decent sum, more than average, and have managed to push their rise this year again as much as possible because they have so many staff, which is an odd concept when you think 20 years ago Petersfield Town Council was served by one person who did all the work. Why they need 15 staff now, I'm sure they'll, or however many it is, 15, 16, 17, I'm sure they'll tell you. But anyway, they put up council tax this year to cover the staff. They're now looking at a £12 million spent on the festival hall. All I can say is, Joff, I have a horrible feeling that you guys are going to be on the back foot and they're going to be trying to be booking professional London stage shows at 50 quid a ticket for Petersfield.
Now, John, have you got any stories that don't involve the taxpayer spending more money than they've got?
No. In a nutshell, no. Yeah, there was a young lady who went to TPS. I think she's probably 24, 25 now, who's made a name for herself in the world of modelling down in the Philippines, although she models worldwide. It's an odd career to get into, is all I can say. But she doesn't have to worry about paying council tax in the Philippines. So I'm off there myself with my bikini on.
And with that image going round our heads, John, thank you very much indeed. Have a cracker week. Have a lovely Valentine's Day. And I'll see you soon.
Take care, mate, and you. Bye.
The Petersfield Post is out every Wednesday and costs 75 pence. So please get one with your weekly shop or subscribe to the digital version. A bargain.
The growing season is nearly upon us, and I don't know about you, but I'm itching to get out in the garden again.
Oh, me too. I can't wait for a barbecue or two.
Whether you like to get your hands dirty or prefer to spend your time relaxing, Joff, we can't get enough of our green spaces. Steve Amos from the Adhurst Estate Allotments explains how popular the allotment has become in the last year and the benefits of being part of a gardening community. Hi, Steve. It's great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us in the Peapod.
No problem at all. Nice to speak to you.
How long have the allotments been at the site they are now at the Adhurst Estate?
Okay, so a brief history in time for you. Back in 2011, David Petchy, my predecessor as chairman, was on the town planning committee, and there was a desperate need for allotments. So basically, he turned around and said, well, look, if I can find some land, I'll open up some new allotments, which is what he did. And the first spade in the ground after many meetings was back in sort of springish of 2012.
I love that expression, the first spade in the ground. That must have been quite an occasion.
Yeah, I'm not sure who was exactly first, but I know I was one of the first. I know that.
So why did you get involved then?
I got involved as an allotmenteer. I didn't join in as a committee member or anything, but I've always enjoyed a bit of pottering about in the garden, and the chance came up to have an allotment, and my wife said to me, do you fancy having a go? And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And the rest, as they say, is history.
That's brilliant. So you must have seen some changes then, because how many plots were there initially at the site?
I think there must have been about 45, 50 plots. We opened up even more plots this summer, actually, due to the massive demand through the COVID crisis. I think we're now at about 107.
Really? That's a lot of plots.
Yeah, I know. I should take a wage. It's a full-time job some days.
You noticed a large increase in demand then last year. Would you attribute that to the lockdown and people having extra time on their hands?
Yeah, I think it was twofold, really. I think a lot of people found themselves having a lot of time on their hands, but also I think it gave people a lot of time to reflect on what was important to them. And certainly, having spoken to people that have had allotments since the lockdown, they've absolutely loved it. And I think, yes, it's important for people to get some time outside, but I also think having to queue up to go to the supermarket, you know, people were genuinely worried, weren't they, if there were going to be food shortages. I think that drove people to our door as well. So we made the decision back in June of last year to open up a further 20 plots. And we actually approached the Sheep Parish Council and the Petersfield Town Council waiting list. We had, I think it was 37 applications for our 20 plots.
So you filled them all pretty quickly. Do you have plans to open up any more space? Do you have any more space to open up?
We don't really have any more space to open up any more allotments. I think it was quite an unprecedented bit of an experiment, actually, because on one day, 20 families moved into the allotments all in one go. It was brilliant. It was really quite entertaining to watch the speed and the development of the plots. But as for opening any more, at present, we don't have the space. But, you know, we're always interested in having conversations with people and showing them around and putting them on the waiting list, because human nature, people change their minds, people lose interest. And I genuinely think when we get back to whatever normal is going to look like, we'll probably lose a few people as well.
Yeah, I guess that's probably the reality of it all, isn't it? One thing I do think that allotments and community gardens, because of course you are right next door to the Petersfield Community Garden. One thing they do bring is this amazing sense of community spirit. Have you noticed that down at the Adhurst estate allotments?
Oh, massively. It is amazing. We've got a few key workers that are tenants on the plots. We've got people that work in hospitals. We've got nurses. We've got intensive care nurses. And I know how much the space has meant to them from a mental health perspective. But from a community point of view, in normal times, we do have working groups and what have you. Because we're an independently ran association, the council don't come and cut the grass for us. You know, they don't cut the hedges, they don't put fences up for us. We do all that work ourselves. So we've tried to keep as much of that going over the last 12 months as we can with social distancing. But no, very much a community spirit, and it's great. We get about 20, 30 people turn up to these working days and everyone mucks in, and it's good fun. And it, as you say, that community spirit is brilliant.
What would you say to people who are considering trying a bit of gardening, even if they can't access an allotment at the moment with you? It's almost the time to start growing a few seeds and thinking about what you're going to be growing this year. What would you say to people who are considering gardening?
I love being outdoors. And I think even if you're just having a potter, I mean, the community garden is a fantastic place to give it a go. The guys over there, I mean, they're tenants of ours, and they've got three plots, essentially. And they welcome people coming in and giving it a go. And once you've dug something or planted something or grown something and then eaten it, what a sense of achievement that gives you. Even if it's just a radish or a bag of potatoes or something like that, it doesn't have to be complicated or difficult. But it's that sense of achievement. And once you've tasted something you've grown yourself, you'll be hooked, I guarantee it.
So for you, what would you say the best thing is about having an allotment?
I think it's that community. It really is. And it's talking to people and that sense of achievement as well. You just can't beat it. It's such good fun. People think I'm old before my time, but it's interesting, the demographic of people we've got at our allotments. Most people sort of think of allotment holders as old men in flat caps. Probably 60% of our tenants are youngish families, which is great.
Talking about old men in flat caps, actually, that's taken me right back to when I was a little girl, because my gramps had an allotment and I have these amazing memories of walking up the lane from his house to the allotment and going there to pick peas and then sitting on a little stool and podding the peas. Really, that's what's taken me to wanting to grow my own vegetables. So it's really lovely to hear that you have a wide variety of different age groups, everyone coming along to experience.
No, it's great. And, you know, it's a place where, you know, once you go through the gate, you can forget about what's going on in the world. The noise of the birds singing, the peace, the quiet. We've got such a beautiful sight. People look at it and go, wow, I never expected an allotment to look like this, because we're surrounded by trees and wildlife. It is just a truly fantastic place to be.
Steve, it's been really lovely talking to you about it. I'm so excited about this upcoming growing season, and it's really heartening to hear that the community is still strong and thriving at the Adhurst estate allotments. Thanks so much for telling us about it.
No problem at all. Thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks, Steve. If you're interested in the Adhurst estate allotments or the Petersfield Community Garden, you can find out more about them both online.
The P stands for Petersfield.
I think it's an amazing place to live.
The Pea Pod.
Susie's back for her weekly wild walk, but this time she's not alone.
Well, I hope you heard that. That was the rather ear-splitting shrieking of cattle who are in the most desperate, muddy field. It really looks dreadful. They don't even have a good view of the downs today because it's so misty. But the tractor, if you heard sort of metallic banging as well, has just dumped some fodder into their sort of feeding rings. I don't know why they're still... Oh, I know why. It's because, of course... Right, I've got it. So he's actually got to fill each field. So he's just done the field on my left. And so they're all quiet and happily grazing. But the noise is still from the cattle who are our side, who are looking hilariously affronted, actually. I might see if I can get a photograph, because they're all lined up at the fence, giving it what ho, because they also want to be fed. Yeah, I'm doing Durford yet again. I see so many new people now, but we know each other by sight because we're all staying local. It's been attritional, as you know, so that we're all squelching, squeaking, slipping, laughing, but keeping our social distance, which is good. I'm going to be talking shortly to Harrison about mental health, and so I was thinking about it and thinking how really essential to me this daily walk is. I've had a bit of a sore throat for ages, but I'm ignoring that and piling on because, really, don't go that way. Because I just love that companionship with Rain that I always try and share with you as well. Let you know her particular badness. I hope you enjoyed the flapjack walk. That was hilarious. Oh. Peace. Well, for an instant. I think they're becoming disconsolate now because the tractor's entirely vanished. It's nipped back to the farm to get the feed. But thank you so much, those of you who've written in, to say that this has been helpful. I can't imagine why, but I do my best. But it really means a lot to me as well to have comments back, though. Thank you so much. And, well, we wait for spring, don't we? We have some snowdrops in the garden. I can't really believe that January is over still. You know, on we go. And, yeah, look after your own health and happiness.
Thanks, Susie. All of Susie's wild walks are available to listen to on shineradio.uk. And you can also catch up with Susie in her fortnightly Talking Books audio series. Now, Joff, if the drinking water wasn't fit to drink, what would you choose to quench your thirst instead?
Perhaps I should say orange squash, or maybe a white wine and soda.
Well, Ryan Watts from
A shandy. Let's go through every drink.
Well, Ryan Watts from the Petersfield Museum has put together a new series of 60-second histories about the role of alcohol in the history of Petersfield. And it was an important one.
Over the last 300 years, Petersfield has been home to at least 40 different pubs, inns, hotels and alehouses, numerous breweries, had investment from a Victorian gin magnate and has connections with premium Australian wine. I'm Ryan from Petersfield Museum, and in this new series of 60-second histories, we will be exploring the history and importance of alcohol to Petersfield and its past. Before modern plumbing, drinking water was not always safe to drink. As a result, people turned to ale, beer and other alcoholic beverages to quench their thirst, as the fermentation process managed to kill off the bacteria that made the water risky to drink. As a result, most towns and villages had their own breweries, and Petersfield was no exception. The town was once home to countless breweries, from small backyard cottage industries to large commercial concerns. The biggest and last of Petersfield breweries was Amy's Brewery. Here is the history of Amy's Brewery in 60 seconds. Amy's Brewery was founded in 1875 by Thomas Amy, a dairy farmer who had made his fortune in manufacturing condensed milk. Originally called the Borough Brewery, it went through a number of name changes before being registered as a limited company as Amy's Brewery Limited in 1941. In 1883, the Borough Brewery was built at the south end of Frenchman's Road, the building that now houses Little John Bathrooms. Its position next to the main Portsmouth to London railway line meant that the brewery could have its own private railway sidings for bringing in supplies as well as distributing its beer. At its height, the brewery estate included over 20 properties, including the Bell Inn on St Peter's Road, now Josie's Cafe, the Royal Oak on Sheep Street, and the Trooper at Froxfield, in addition to pubs as far away as Portsmouth and Guildford. They even had a pub at the Hole in the Wall in Waterloo. Amy's cask beers included Double X Mild, Triple X Strong Mild, Light Bitter, Pale Ale, Stout, Oatmeal Stout and Double Stout. Their bottled beer range included the delightfully named Petersfield Porter and Petersfield Peter's Sister. After the Second World War, Amy's found trading conditions difficult and in 1951 the brewery was sold to Whitbread & Co. Limited. And there you have it, the history of Amy's Brewery in just 60 seconds. You can find out more about the history of alcohol in Petersfield on our YouTube channel. Just search Petersfield and Alcohol. Or explore the lost pubs of Petersfield with our downloadable walk available on our website.
Thanks, Ryan. The Petersfield Museum is currently being renovated and we're awaiting its reopening, which will hopefully be in May.
Coming up, Michael Clement tells us about his new photography project. And Ben and Charlotte Salvetti Langton bring news of last week's NHS fundraiser. But first, here are a few things you can do while we wait for events to start again.
The Peapod Events Guide. What's on in the Petersphere?
Homestart Butzer and the Half Moon Sheet have joined forces with the Phoenix Art Club in London's West End to bring a musical theatre home dining experience via Zoom. The event takes place on Sunday 20th of February with live entertainment from the West End and a two-course lunch delivered. Tickets cost £20, £5 of which will go to Homestart Butzer. For more details, go to Homestart Butts' website.
The South Downs National Park Dark Skies Festival continues this week with a variety of stargazing events. To find out more and to join in the cosmic fun, go to the South Downs National Park website.
The free shop at the hub by the train station is still open. From Wednesday 12 till 4, Friday 10 till 12 and Saturday 10 till 12, they also have a box for donations to the Petersfield Food Bank should you wish to donate.
The Petersfield Town Council are manning the local lockdown helpline on 01730 779 296. And a further lockdown helpline leaflet will be going out to every Petersfield household soon.
And there's always your local radio station, Shine Radio, to listen to. You can choose from a wide variety of audio shows which are available to listen to on demand, or tune in to the brighter mix of music, local news and weather. That's shineradio.uk, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
If you're running an event, get it in the guide. Just email pod@thepod.uk.
Michael Clement has had a successful career as a portrait photographer and has taken pictures of many musicians and actors we'd all recognise. But last year's lockdown put a stop to all that, and instead, Michael started a project closer to home.
Michael, welcome back to the Peapod. We last spoke to you in October and we discussed how you'd been working on a personal project. Can you tell us a bit more about it, please?
All the photography was done over the summer and towards the autumn of 2020. But I think it's still such a pertinent metaphor, really, for where we still are. It seems like since our conversation in the autumn, nothing really has changed. We still seem to be in lockdown. But the project was documenting the Adhurst estate allotments. And at the moment, I'm trying to place the pictures. We've had some interest from The Observer and a few other magazines. So it's going to be a case of watch this space, where they actually go.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing the photographs. Was this a project that you'd always wanted to do, or was it as a result of lockdown, or did it just come out of nowhere?
It was certainly the latter, really. I think everyone was in a slightly strange place in the first lockdown, and we all sort of got into our habits of going on our daily walks. Purely by chance, happened to be walking past the allotments, and Steve was at the gate, and he's such a friendly chap, and we got into a conversation, and he said, well, I'll show you around. For anyone who's not familiar with the place, you can see some of the allotments actually from the road, but there's a whole section that is sort of hidden behind a tall hedge and a line of trees. And arguably that's possibly the more magical place, because it's a more mature area and it's quite a private space. And it really is just this wonderful spot. And so after discussions with Steve, he posted on the allotments Facebook page announcing that I was keen to document the people in the place and if anyone had any objections. And thank goodness no one did. So it was very much both a photographic project documenting how people were getting through these strange times, but also it was a very cathartic process for me, because I tend to go up there most days and just have a wander around. And sometimes I got there was no one about. One time I literally got there and was walking around and turned the corner and there was this huge deer just staring me out. So it served many purposes. But I think what was so interesting is that there's a whole range of different personalities tending their little space. Some are bigger than others. And the sort of small patch of land was almost acting as a descriptive for the characters who were attending that plot. And some were doing it purely just to get out of the house. Some people don't have a garden, and the allotments were their outside space. So the sort of running title for the project at the moment is Food for the Soul, which is as much suggesting it's a place of sanctuary as somewhere to take time out, to grow food, to grow plants, grow flowers. Some of the spaces are run by families, so it was great. It's almost an outdoor playground. And in fact, actually, the local school do have this fantastic area up there. And someone's fashioned this sort of willow tree into this den where children can play in and make mud pies. So it's all ages, a real cross-section of society.
During your documentary time, when you were there taking the photographs, did you have the opportunity to speak to some of the allotment holders about what they get out of growing and being part of that community there?
definitely. Funny enough, it is a much harder genre to document than I anticipated. And you tend to find that previous work that's been done by photographers has been printed. Very often it's that juxtaposition of a sort of urban allotment surrounded by high-rise city blocks, whereas this is something that is bang in the middle of the countryside. And so there's a sense of the more powerful pictures, you could argue, would be where there's some possibly more eccentric characters. But it was the narrative of why people are there that interests me. So, for example, there's one lady who works in an intensive care unit. And other than the fact that in her shed, you know, there's various items that have been repurposed that have been thrown out from the hospital and sort of, you know, anything from sort of something to hold a spade together. But, you know, she said that sometimes she goes up to the allotment and she just has to stand in her space and just stand there and breathe and look around. And without it, she'd have lost her sanity. I looked at the allotment's Facebook page and I noticed some of the comments were, if I didn't have this space, my mental health would be very challenged. I think that was the real interest to me, is both the diverse group of residents there, but also why people are using the spaces and the fact that they would, in previous years, would never have considered the idea of doing this thing, whereas now suddenly it was becoming their purpose in life for their physical well-being.
It'll be interesting to follow the allotment again this year. Are you planning to go back, do you think, and follow on from what you started last year?
Yes. One of the struggles I had, because I was sort of just doing this on an ad hoc basis, and there was a sort of sense of wanting to meet everyone there. There are a few characters that I'd managed to book a slot in the diary, because I walk around and see their amazing space and then sort of try and imagine who the people were who chosen this area. And other people just bumped into, and they were sort of aware who I was, but it was very much a case of just wandering up and having a chat and asking about their story. So it was a bit ad hoc, as I sort of mentioned. And I think one of the difficulties of doing a personal project is arguably there is no brief, and in some respects I deliberately kept this very open, but I'd sort of wander off in different directions, and the idea is they weren't necessarily standalone pictures, but more a body of work that would certainly form a story and a narrative when viewed possibly as a book form or as a editorial features. So because there is a lot of photographs, even now you could dip into them and create your own story possibly. But I was just trying to pictorially also go down a slightly more abstract route. So it has got to a stage where I think I've edited down maybe just to 20 pictures, which may seem a very hefty cull considering there's probably a couple of thousand photographs taken. But it's those 20 pictures that hopefully have distilled and condensed the story that I'm trying to deliver at the moment.
Thanks to Michael Clement, we'll bring you news of when the photographs will be available to view.
Claire Venice and Geoff Lacey in Petersfield's Peapod.
When Ben and Charlotte Salvetti Langton and Rob Carr decided to start a fundraiser for the NHS staff at the Petersfield Community Hospital, little did they know what response they were going to get, or how cold last week was going to be.
The aim was to encourage people to run, walk or cycle to reach collectively 1,000 kilometres in a week, while at the same time accepting donations via a JustGiving page. Shine Radio's Laura Shepherd spoke to Ben and Charlotte to find out more.
So the challenge that we set was to invite community from Petersfield to join us to run, walk, wheel or cycle. Our aim was 1,000 kilometres within the week, and we achieved it and absolutely smashed it.
So actually we managed to do over 2,000 kilometres. We did 2,088 kilometres in the end. That was 1,600 running or walking, and then there was an additional 450 from the cyclists as well. So, yeah, like Charlotte said, we absolutely smashed it.
It's more than double. That's fantastic.
Yeah, that's amazing.
With your help as well.
Yeah, with the Radio Shine team involved, yeah.
Yeah, there was a team involved. And you were fundraising as well. So how much did you raise?
So we raised £1,555. And all that money is going to be used to buy gifts from local businesses to give to the NHS staff at Petersfield Community Hospital to say thank you for all the work that they've done in the last year with the pandemic.
We had so many people were so generous as well. There were over 70 people that have donated towards that Just Giving page. And there were some really big contributions as well.
Yeah, so thank you to everyone that's donated.
So have you got any idea what you're going to buy?
So we've had a few businesses contact us, and we're basically asking local businesses to get in touch with us, really, to buy just suitable gifts. It can be anything, really, whether it's, you know, chocolates, candles, like homemade things, vouchers for services that people offer in the local community. Anything, really, would be appreciated.
So this is supporting local businesses as well as buying gifts. How do people get in touch with you if they've got something that they think is appropriate?
Yeah, perfect. So if you've got something appropriate, then get in touch with us on our website at bodyandmindphysiotherapy.com, and you'll find our details of how to contact us on there.
Thank you so much to all the participants who volunteered to, you know, give up their time to join us. It had such an amazing community feel, and, you know, everyone's been supporting each other and achieving, you know, their personal best, or even just getting out on the streets and not realizing that they can, you know, achieve, you know, a little jog or even some distance with their walking. So it's been a really rewarding week, and we're so pleased we've done it.
Well done to both of you and to all of your team and everybody that was involved. And thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Laura.
Well done to everyone involved. If you'd like to donate, you can still do so by going to the Just Giving website and searching for Thank Petersfield Community Hospital.
And that's it for this week's Peapod. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks also to our guests Steve Amos, Michael Clement, Ryan Watts, Ben and Charlotte Salvetti Langton, Laura Shepherd, Susie Wild, and John Walker. And of course, to the fabulous team at Shine Radio who support the show and help to put it together.
This week, Waterlooville-based Hannah Ream ends the show with her bluesy song Foolish Pride. Hannah was recently interviewed on Mandy P's Local Music Showcase. Tune in every Thursday evening at 8 to hear the latest local music.
You can find out more about Hannah Ream on all the usual social media platforms and look out for her upcoming single, Beg, Steal, Borrow, out on Friday, February the 19th.
Next week, we'll be finding out about a very important shed coming to Petersfield soon.
So from Joff and I this week, bye! Bye.
I'm your woman, but you ain't my man. I'm your lover, give you the best I can. But you ain't ever gonna be mine. Oh, ain't that a crime? Ain't that a crime? I got your body and I got your heart. I got your attention, baby, right from the start.
We need to have a plan.
Stay at home and make it shine.
You've got it.
Great lockdown listening from Petersfield's Shine Radio.
It's about staying as local as we can and helping as many people in the community as we can.
Joff continues his bromance with John Walker from the Petersfield Post.
Yeah. You do look lovely.
Very much, John.
You're the only person I see every week.
Motivation is a beautiful, beautiful thing.
Hello, my name is Matthew. I'm from Class 1G at Church's College, and this is a song I spent hours listening to in lockdown.
I was walking past College Street and saw the phone box. So I had an idea that I'd start a little bookshop. It's really just come in and help yourself.
We've got lovely Lucy with us and Harrison, who's playing with some knobs.
The real pleasure is in the bass.
Bassline!
It's stupendously crunchy.
I'm feeling quite patient about the whole thing.
Stay at home and make it shine.
Slightly intimidated by being told so precisely what to do.
Great lockdown listening from Petersfield's Shine Radio.